Leadership is something that you learn all your life. You're always working at it, always trying to improve. And you find as time goes on that it's actually probably more of an art than a science. And sometimes there are really unexpected things that impact leadership in some pretty significant ways. Sometimes I've thought about, why do I follow certain people? You know, there's some people that I would just follow anywhere, and there's others that you couldn't pay me to follow. And what makes that person someone that just grabs my heart and my attention? I was not long ago, just 2 months ago, with a man named Dan Spader, who leads something called Global Youth Initiative. And I've known Dan for 20 years and just really appreciate him and his leadership. I was with him with some meetings that he's leading something that I'm a part of. And after about a half an hour there, I was sitting there just listening to him, relating to him. And a thought came to my mind, and the thought was, I would follow Dan anywhere. I just had that sense. I would follow Dan anywhere. And when I felt that thought, I also was filled with love for him, with admiration for him. And then I started thinking, why is that true? Is it because he's well-educated? Well, he is well-educated, but I know a lot of well-educated people that I wouldn't follow anywhere. Is it because he has a good relationship with the Lord? He does have a good relationship with the Lord, but I know people who have good relationships with the Lord that I wouldn't follow anywhere. Is it because he just is so skillful as a leader? Well, he's skillful, but that's not the reason I would follow him anywhere. And I realize that there's an emotional connection that I have with Dan, and there's something that goes back and forth between us, something that I feel from him, maybe he feels from me, that creates a context where literally I would follow him anywhere. I just started thinking about what is that emotion? There's a part of leadership that's very emotional, that's hard to grasp, that is this interchange between hearts that happens underlying the actual activity of leadership, and it makes a huge difference. I would follow Dan anywhere. But sometimes I know when I'm in leadership, people stop following me. And things kind of start to break down. And sometimes I'm confused as to exactly why. I remember about 10 years ago, there was a gifted man on our team. And I said, Mel, I want you to work with me closer. I really like what God's put in your heart, the skills he's given you. Come and serve closer with me. And as we started doing that, we kept getting miscommunication and misunderstanding. And sometimes I would say something and he just totally would not understand. It was like there was this block. I was speaking into a force field and it would go around him. And he just didn't get it. Sometimes I would say something and it would come through to him, but he would way overreact, like he would hear things that I didn't say. And it was like there was communication coming out from me, but by the time it got to him, it either didn't get to him or it got to him in the wrong package. And we just kept missing each other. I don't know if you ever had that. Like we are not in sync. And it was not about the information. It was something emotionally that was happening between us. And finally I sat him down and I said, Mel, you know, Alex, what's going on? We're not working very well together. And he says, well, you know, Dave, I just have this sense. I just don't know if you love me. That was hard for me because I'd worked with him for 5 or 6 years, and I did love him. I knew I loved him. I knew I loved him, and not only that, but I felt like I was doing a lot of things to communicate my love to him. So why wasn't he feeling that? And why was he in this place of self-protection? And I mean, it was just really confusing to me. I said, Mel, I do love you. How come you're not feeling that? Start feeling that, because I love you. What's your problem? And that's what I was feeling. I was confused. I was just really confused. But it was distorting that leadership. And there was an emotional channel that just wasn't syncing up right. And because of that, all the other stuff got twisted and turned. This happens often, and it happens sometimes even more with really gifted leaders. I was with a man from France who runs a very exciting ministry there. He's just so brilliant, and he's so talented as a leader. And he actually asked for a couple days of leadership coaching from me. And I went, oh, what do I have to tell this guy? I mean, he is so talented. We got together. I said, tell me what you're experiencing. He says, well, let me tell you what's happening on my team. My team, I'm losing my team. I can't keep them. They keep leaving. And when they leave hurt and discouraged and broken. And actually, some of them are writing letters about us and spreading information. And I don't quite understand what's going on. I said, what do they say about you? He says, well, they say that I'm just burning them out, that I'm never satisfied with what they do. that I'm just never satisfied, that, and that I don't really care about them, and I don't know. And I said, well, tell me how you're doing personally. He said, well, my physical condition is so shot. He says, I've shot my adrenal glands. I have a hard time sleeping at night. He said, do you know how you feel when you finish jet lag and you know, your first day back after flying across an ocean? He says, that's how I feel at 12 o'clock every day. Halfway through the day, I'm already in that jet lag mode. He says, I'm exhausted. So he's a gifted leader who burning himself out and burning his team out and wants some leadership coaching. So, you know, where would you go? Would you talk about time management? Would you talk about getting people in the right places? Or is there something else going on that maybe is hard to grasp, but that actually maybe even is more important than those skills sit on top of something else that's not happening? So that's kind of my question for us this morning. And obviously, I think that there is something going on, otherwise I wouldn't be saying it. But let's take a look. Before we go farther with that question, let's take a look at a couple of key passages. Actually, in your notes, you see that we talk about basic needs. There's some basic needs that everyone needs. But I gave you some examples. What are your most basic needs? Well, you can actually get some insight into our most basic needs in a couple of interchanges you see between Jesus and his Father. So the most perfect relationship in the universe is obviously the relationship between the members of the Godhead. And there's two places in Scripture where we get to actually listen in on their conversation, which is just really fascinating. I want you to look at the first one, which obviously you know, Matthew 3:17. So Jesus is getting ready to launch into leadership. And the Father's going to give him some things he needs for his leadership. That moment heaven opened, he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove, lighting on him. Okay, we're going to need the Spirit. And a voice from heaven said, this is my Son, whom I love, with him I'm well pleased. Isn't it interesting that the Father had three particular things he wanted to say to his Son in front of everyone else in order to equip him for leadership? You're my Son, whom I love, with him I'm well pleased. That's one of the spots that we overhear the Father talking to his Son. The other one is in Matthew 17:5, because this is all about the kingdom. He takes Peter, James, and John, led them up to a high mountain. He's transfigured, so he's being revealed to them as the king. Peter says to Jesus, verse 3, Lord, it's good for us to be here. If you wish, I'll put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. While he was speaking, a bright cloud enveloped them, and a voice from the cloud said, this is my Son, whom I love. With him I'm well pleased. Listen to him. Sounds kind of like what we heard before, doesn't it? Now, isn't it interesting that the only two times we overhear the Father talking to the Son, he says almost exactly the same thing. So if you listened in on a relationship and only heard two conversations and heard the same thing in different settings and different places, wouldn't you guess that actually is a pretty significant kind of communication that they experience between each other? Like, that's a really important message. And I actually believe that these four things represent some of our most basic soul needs, and soul needs that come from a father heart. So here they are. Identity. This is my Son. Who am I? And who I am, I define in relationship to whose I am. Just like when you're a kid, I used to be very proud of my dad's occupation and his gifting and my last name, because that impacts who I am. Love, pleasure, and this last one I believe is place. Now this takes a little bit more insight, and you'll see we're going to go in another passage in John that has more to do with this, but Peter is saying, I'm going to build three tabernacles, and this is your place, Jesus, and this is Elijah's place, and this is Moses' place. And the Father says, no, you listen to my Son. In other words, I define and defend my Son's place. You don't. So you've got my Son in the wrong place, and I'm going to put him and all of you in proper relationship. This is his place. And we're going to see this even more significant later on. But I believe that the place comes from the Father. Love comes from the Father. Identity comes from the Father. And pleasure comes from the Father. And these four streams are designed to meet the most basic needs of our soul. We're designed to get them first from our earthly fathers, and then have our earthly fathers imprint us with the capacity to connect with our Heavenly Father in those same ways. But there's a problem that none of us have perfect earthly fathers. So our imprinting in these key heart areas is always a little off, no matter how good of fathers we have. It's always off. So what do we experience from our earthly fathers or other father figures in our life? Because of the fall, none of us have perfect fathers. We're marked by sin, so are they. As we grow up, each of us ends up with a combination. We get some father gifts. So think about your father. Because your father is probably more significant. He may be gone by now than you know in terms of how you lead. Your father still impacts your leadership. Okay, how did he relate to you? Did you experience love from him? Did you experience identity? Did you experience place? My dad was actually really good at a couple of these areas, like really good. I can remember that area of pleasure. I can remember my dad traveled a lot, and I would do anything to get my dad's pleasure. I just loved it when my dad was pleased. And one time he went on a long trip, and I was thinking, how could I surprise my dad right now? And I thought, I will totally redesign our yard. And so I was about 11 years old, and I came home from school every day, and the first day I edged the grass so it was in a straight line. Second day I trimmed the bushes. The third day I planted some flowers. The fourth day I cleaned up in a back spot. And I am working hard. No one's paying me to do this. I'm doing this in my free time. But I'm energized by the whole time I'm thinking, I'm going to surprise Dad. I'm picturing his response. I'm going to make Dad proud of me. I'm going to make him pleased. I'm just thinking about this. So 2 weeks of this work, and then my dad comes home. My mom picks him up at the airport, and I don't know if she primed him on the way home, but he got out of the car. I ran out to meet him in the car. I grabbed his bag, said, I'll help you with your bag, Dad, and we start walking in, and I'm not looking forward. I'm looking back. I'm watching his eyes. We round the corner. He stops. He looks at the yard, and he goes, the yard looks great. Who did this? That's it. Yeah, it was me. He said, who told you to do this? No, nobody. You came up with this by yourself? Look at those bushes. They're wonderful. Those flowers, you picked those out? That's great. And the lawn, it has an edge beside the sidewalk. And that is so wonderful. Dave, that's just, and you did it by yourself?
Yeah, nobody helped me.
And I'm just looking at his eyes the whole time, because what I want is I want that father pleasure. I want that father pride. I want my father to say, amazing, well done, good job. And he did. And I was totally satisfied. Like that was enough. 2 weeks of work, absolutely worth it, because I knew I had my father's pleasure. It's a wonderful thing. And what happens in homes, though, where you can't get dad's pleasure? Like it's impossible. Dad's always discouraging, always disappointed, always whatever. And so if you get those gifts, they're just really amazing. Some people experience great love from their father. Some people experience place from their father. But then all of us have father wounds. And these are areas where not only did our father not give us what we needed in that area, but he gave us just the opposite. Remember talking, not long ago I was talking to a leader who's very capable, but constantly insecure. I start talking to him about his dad, and he says, I can still remember when I was 12 years old, sitting in the living room, and my dad looking over, he was reading his magazine, he looked over at me, and he goes, you know what? A normal boy would be asking his dad to play baseball with him right now. Okay, how do you respond to that? So he's sitting there 12 years old. My dad just told me I'm not normal. And my dad just told me that I should be initiating in this relationship, not he. And just over and over and over again, his dad would share with him how incompetent he was, how he couldn't do anything, how he wasn't, his dad expected him to, his dad was a very hard-charging, very wealthy businessman. His son is quite sensitive, very different personality. And his dad was saying, you're not valuable because you're not like me. I'm basically disappointed with what you're doing and who you are. And he can recount these conversations word for word 30 years later. word for word 30 years later. And a lot of us have wounds like that as well. We can remember the moment. We can remember the words. It's still sharp like it was yesterday. I was speaking once for a group of wealthy individuals at a gathering, and I talked about how there's some times where my dad as an adult treated me like a boy, and a man came afterwards and he said, I'm 70 years old, my dad is 90, and he still treats me like a boy. He says, when I'm with him, I feel like this small. And he said, but you know what the saddest thing is? That I treat my boys the same way. He says, how do I break this chain? So we have these wounds that often our dads didn't give us what we wanted, what we needed, and then we're passing those wounds on. And we're not just passing those wounds on to our kids, we're passing them on to the people we lead, because they're experiencing this woundedness right on through us. And then there are father vacuums. These are areas where our fathers did not give us what we needed. They just didn't give us anything. Maybe they didn't give us the opposite. We needed love. They didn't give us hatred. But maybe they just didn't give us anything. My dad was really good at the area of pleasure. He's also really good at the area of place. But he just did not understand the area of love. Just didn't. He grew up in a divorced home. Lost his mom, left the family when he was 8. And he and his dad basically just kind of lived together. And he had to do the cooking for his dad. He didn't grow up in a really nurturing environment. He grew up on a farm. It was all about work, getting things done. And he had a close relationship with his dad, but never expressed affection. So I kind of knew my dad loved me. Kind of. But it was because I had to guess. And I wasn't, I would just kind of guess it from his behavior. I never once heard him say it. He was not demonstrative physically, so there wasn't a hug or a touch or something like that. Just that communication channel, he just didn't know how to give it. And so I ended up with a vacuum in that area of my life. Now, I respected my dad so much that I felt like, okay, that's the way it should be. And you remember the story I started with about somebody not feeling loved that I'm leading? Okay, where's that coming from? It's been imprinted on me from, well, this is the way you lead somebody. You don't lead them in a loving way, because my dad didn't, and I don't need it, so you must not either. And it was like those love channels were just not open in my heart, and were deeply impacting my leadership. I remember when I was in college thinking, I want to start expressing my love towards my dad, and I'm going to hug him when I see him when I come home from college. So I walked in the door, and I went over, and I gave him a big hug, and it was like hugging a board. You know, he was like, he just didn't know what to do. It was like a board. And then I left. When I left, I said, Dad, I love you. And he did not know what to do with that. He was like, yeah, me too. He just really just did not have those categories. And so I grew up with some real father vacuums. And every one of us leaders have fathers that failed us, even the best of them. They're just not going to be enough. And that father failure will affect your leadership. One of the first questions I asked, we'll call this man Tom that I was telling you about, that trashing his team. I said, tell me about your dad. And he goes, oh, why are you asking me about my dad? How does that relate to my leadership? I go, dads always relate to leadership. And I said, tell me about your dad. He said, well, my parents were divorced. I didn't see my dad for about 6 years on. And he told about growing up fatherless. And then about the few interchanges he had with his dad that were very distant. His dad never bonded with him. He talked about walking into his office and just standing there wanting to somehow connect with his dad. And his dad turning to say, what do you need? He's saying, I don't know. If you don't need anything, why are you standing here? I don't know. And just ignoring him. So he's coming in saying, I want connection with my dad's heart. It wasn't there. So he's got some huge vacuums, some huge wounds, and that's just flowing right out into his leadership and affecting a lot of other people. So if we would draw this, you've got a space on your sheet for the. If we would look inside of each one of us, we'd see this heart, this area that was designed to be filled. And you know, hearts are places that receive and give. So I have blood that comes in and then oxygenated blood that goes out, this flow. And there's some deep needs in my life where I was meant to receive and give those four key areas: identity, love, pleasure, and place. So what happens is that, and sometimes I actually will draw this out and I'll say, would you just kind of do some mapping of your heart? What happens is that maybe I'm filled up this far with Father gifts in this area, but then I got some significant Father wounds and some Father vacuums. Maybe in this area, I'm much, much, much further. And then maybe it's just a vacuum in this area. Maybe in this area, there's just like nothing. There's just a little bit here that I've kind of made up for myself. And that's, if you were to x-ray into my heart, this is what you'd see. Now, this is what you'd see, but let me tell you what you would experience. Because you would experience this if I was leading you. You'd experience this. You would experience that if you ran into an area where I was filled, that I would be a person who both would easily give and receive love. If you came up to me and said, "Dave, I really care about you," I'd go, "Thank you." That means a lot. You'd feel that love touched me. And as we related, you would feel love for me. And actually, that's what Mel was not feeling, my friend. So why? Well, because he was hitting an area of vacuum. And if you hit an area of vacuum, you're probably going to do two things. Either I'm going to be dead in that area, because vacuums are empty, or I'm going to be constantly, what's the other thing that vacuums do? So you're gonna find that either I'm walled in that area, which was my case, in the area of love. I don't need love. You shouldn't need it either. I mean, I'm leading you. Why are you talking about if I love you or not? And I do. You should just watch my actions and you'll see it. You know. So that's what you're going to find. Or you're going to find, do you love me? Do all of you really love me? And I'm going to just be constantly, like I have a backflow into my environment because I'm trying to get it all the time. So what happens is, here you see a clear giving and receiving. If you have a vacuum, you will either have a pull or a wall. What happens if you run into a wound? What happens if you got a wound on your arm and I say, "Hey, how's it going?" And I go like this to you. You're gonna overreact, aren't you? You go, "Whoa. I just tapped you on the shoulder. Stop that." Because what you're doing is you're actually touching something that's an old wound that's not there. And what you'll find with wounds is either distortion, like you overreact, someone comes up and criticizes you, or you'll find the same thing. You have to self-protect to keep from getting touched in that area. And one of the things that my friend Tom was experiencing was some of the people on his team would come up and they'd give him suggestions and criticisms, and he would like way overreact. He would feel like you're attacking me, you're trying to throw me out of my position of leadership because they were touching this old wound, like you're trying to take my place from me, which I had to fight and get my place myself because no one gave me my place. And so my place is in constant threat because I found my place, no one gave it to me. And so someone comes up and says, "Hey, I think you could do a better job." And he goes into massive self-defense mode and starts shooting him down to protect himself. Because you touched on a wound and you get an overreaction. So as people relate to me, they're going to get a combination of really wonderful giving and receiving in these areas. And then if they hit a vacuum, they're going to get deadness, or they're going to get a wall. And they're going to get, if they hit an area of woundedness, they're going to get distortion. But I've had that question asked. I think that these are universal categories. I think this is just universal. And what's so cool to me is that it actually comes out of those texts. You know, why did the Father say those four things? I think these are really the basic needs of man. So I think I'd talk about them, but if they would say, "What do I do about it?" I'm going to talk a little bit in a minute about what you could do about it. I don't know what to do without God. So that's where I run into it. I really don't. Because otherwise you're self-fathering, and it's really hard to self-father. Question was, are gifts positive and wounds and vacuums negative? Wounds and vacuums I would consider always negative. So the gifts would be things that I come around the corner, my dad goes, "That was great." And it's teaching me that it's possible to get my Father's pleasure, and that my Father's pleasure is wonderful, and that I want more of it, And then I'd shift that up towards God, and I go, God, I want to please you. You know, so that gift really helps me get aligned properly with God as Father. If I come to the conclusion, because he comes around and goes, well, that was stupid. Well, why didn't you ask me? You know, and I go, oh man, I'm trying. And then, oh, that, you know, then I'm going to start, then that impacts how I'm continuing to relate the rest of my life. So I would say the gift, the wounds and the vacuums would be negative. It really is rooted in God. Yeah. I think we can't fix this without getting refathered by God and connecting with God's Father heart in a way where that's flowing. I don't think we could just fix it ourselves. I think I don't totally understand it, but there is something that's unique about a father voice, and I don't understand it. But like in Ephesians, it says, for this reason I kneel before the Father, from whom all living things on heaven and earth derive their name. It's really interesting that naming, identity, comes from a father heart. You see in the garden, Adam named the animals. And so this is not a value issue, but it is there's a certain voice, there's a role. It's interesting that even physically, that when a man and a woman together produce a baby, the woman does most of the work, but the man determines the gender. The man has the XY, the woman has XX, and it's whatever happens. If you know, it's that that determines the gender. The male contribution is the gender defining, is the identity defining portion of it, which is really interesting. Now, obviously, then the woman's portion is like she makes it all happen, which is astounding. But there is kind of an identity defining father voice, and now I think it can come through a mother. But it comes through a mother reflecting the father. So it comes through a mother who, like in with our kids, Connie can often speak words. But it's really interesting. Connie sometimes, my wife has sometimes a long talk with our kids, and then we'll get to the end, and they'll say, well, what does dad think? And my wife will come to me and say, this is just totally not fair. Like, I had the two-hour conversation, but they want to know what dad thinks. And there's something about what dad thinks that has kind of a defining nature to it. I don't know why, but you see it over and over again. You talk about, this happened just, my son asked someone to marry him a week and a half ago. And he was going to wait 4 months. And Connie came to me, my wife came to me and said, I don't think you should wait that long. So we had this talk about it. And then she called him and told him that. And then I got on the phone and said, I really agree. This is really right. Well, he goes to talk to my other son and said, I just had a talk with dad. And he thinks I should go forward in it. And my wife came to me and says, there it goes again. There we go again. It was her idea. She actually initiated half the conversation. But my voice at the end was the defining voice for it. I don't know why that is, but there is something to that father voice that I don't understand. We're going to get to this in a second. Good leadership streams the Father heart of God. So in other words, I should be always receiving these things from the Father, and people should be feeling them through me. So my heart is alive to, I am experiencing God's love and giving it on. Now, I think for a woman, they'll give it on. They'll give father love in the key of mother. But it's coming from the Father. And sometimes I can give father identity in the key of brother. Because I'm not in a father relationship with that person. But it is, the key is where it's coming from. If it's coming from the Father, it has that potency, and I may pass it on in a different key. So I think women in their leadership should be streaming the Father heart of God, but it'll have a different key that it streams in. Let's stop now and go a little deeper in these four areas, and then come back to that question about what you do about it. But let's try to understand the four areas just a little bit deeper. And then the key question is, what do we do about it? The question is, what do we do about it in ourselves, and what do we do about it in people we lead, or leaders we're coaching that are just totally missing this out? How does this affect our relationships and behavior? We went through this. Father gifts produce giving and receiving. Father wounds produce distortion and protection. I don't know if you got that. Father vacuums, I was drawing it, but produce vacuums and walls. So this little drawing that I did right here, that's that distortion. And actually, I could draw that in there. Yeah, if I hit a wound, I'm going to get a distortion. Or else I also will get a self-protected wall. So these both produce walls for different reasons. This is more of a deadness, and this is a self-protection. And then there's this distortion. So if you're outside of it and you run into, like you're saying, wow, this is really getting distorted, it'll kind of give you a clue as to what's going on inside. How does this affect your leadership? Now, there's an amazing passage we overheard the conversation in Matthew, but let's go to John, because here we hear Jesus talking about his relationship with the Father, and you hear the same information from a different perspective. It's pretty amazing. John 5 and 16 through 19. So I hope you guess. Everybody with electronic Bible, but you can't hear the pages turn. So I'm going, are you really looking at your Bibles? Because you need to see this. So if you get your Bible, I'm not going to show this text up on the screen, and you need to see it. So get it out. 16 through 19. And what happens here is Jesus heals a man on the Sabbath. And later on, Jesus finds the man, says, stop sinning. So he healed the man on the Sabbath. And then look at verse 16. So because Jesus was doing these things on the Sabbath, the Jews persecuted him. So Jesus is under leadership pressure. He's leading, and the people that he's interacting with are really opposing him. What happens to you when you're under leadership pressure? When either because of people's response, look at how Jesus responds. He actually steps back into his relationship with his Father and finds security there. He says, my Father is always at his work to this very day, and I too am working. Why is he talking about his Father? Because that's where he finds security and protection. So he knows who he is because he knows whose he is. And when they're saying, you don't have the authority to do this on the Sabbath, he goes, listen, my Father's God, and I just look at him and do what he does. And they understand that this is an identity issue, because it says, for this reason, the Jews tried all the harder to kill him. Not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. Okay, they understand what's going on. And it's interesting that identity gives worth. He's equal with God. You mean, if he's God's son, then he's equal. And often if people don't have identity, they're in a constant worth deficiency. They don't know who they are, and they're always trying to resolve this worth problem. Do I have any worth because I don't know who I am? And they're recognizing he knows who he is and whose he is. So, wait, you can't have that much worth. That's not fair. That's kind of their response. But you see him stepping back into his identity. Now, you see on your page some description of what happens when that's not there. Here's the question. Who am I? Am I valuable? Do I have to be just like you to be significant? Am I competent, capable? Without identity from the Father, you'll be defined by people and circumstances around you. This will be constantly changing and unstable. You will be very vulnerable to your environment. You will not have a clear sense of self. You will constantly need to prove yourself or defend yourself. Instead of I failed, you'll think I'm a failure. Instead of they are disappointed, you think I am disappointing, because it pushes into identity. Instead of it didn't work, I have to try again, you think I am incapable. Instead of that wasn't worthwhile, you think I'm worthless. Instead of your opinion is important, you think I am what you think of me. Now, how does this distort leadership if you don't have this area sorted out? Trying to please everyone? Or else you're just going, no, I'm not. Yeah. So then there's this stream of trying to resolve my identity that underlines everything else that I'm doing. And then here's the really difficult thing is people around me, if you're a leader, are looking for you to define their identity. They're looking for God's Father heart to be coming through towards you. If you don't have that, you create a backflow, and you're actually stripping them of their identity to create your own. You follow me on that? And that is so hard. You find people who don't have a clear identity are always stripping other people's identity to find theirs. People don't want to follow them. Now, I lose myself in you trying to figure out who yourself when you leave. Now, one of the things, we're going to get this in a minute, but one of the things that's important to realize is you can actually tell people this, but if you don't resolve the underlying unmet need, it won't make any difference. They'll just be more sophisticated in the way they get it. Did you follow me on that? Like, there is a real need unless it's met. So I could talk to Tom and explain all this, but if he doesn't actually encounter the Father in this area, if he doesn't connect with the Father in terms of identity, it's just information. Because it really has to come from the Father. I don't know if that, so this is part of it. As we get to resolving this, we really do have to lead people to God's Father heart, to a real connection with Him. And because there really is no answer apart from that. Any other thoughts on this area of identity? Okay, we'll move on to the next one, love. And this is, am I loved unconditionally? Am I precious and treasured to someone? Do I matter to anyone? Does someone care deeply about me? Do I feel and hear your love and affection? And look at, again, Jesus is being pressed. And look at John 5:20. What's he say? He says, he also says, I can't do anything by myself. Because whatever the Father does, the Son also does. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all he does. Isn't that interesting how he's defending himself? And what is he doing? He's just reaching right back into these four areas, which is just so fascinating, one right after the other. And so he's saying, I know the Father loves me. And he shows me everything he does. And he says, I'm secure the Father loves me. And it's interesting that love is tied to self-disclosure, like the Father shows his heart to me. And I think identity gives worth. Love gives security, because he's saying, you know, hey, I'm fine. He'll show me everything he does. If that's not there, without love, you'll be constantly trying to gain love from those near you. Their love will never be enough, and you'll be chronically disappointed. You may cope by turning off your emotions and becoming distant and cold. And this was my situation. I was just turning off my emotions. You'll have a hard time trusting love. It may not penetrate. Your relationships will become consumed with getting rather than giving. You'll have a hard time giving love to others. Okay? How does this distort leadership? Maybe even if we're thinking about this, can you think of any particular examples? You don't have to say the name of the person, but I think you're probably thinking of examples. Like, what does this look like? You know this. You've either done this or experienced this. So what's it look like? Now, went back to your question of love and identity. I would, probably with my dad, I would say he was really good at identity and really poor at love. So I would separate them, but you can consider this. And I'll tell you the ways he was good at identity. Like when I was growing up, I had a very loud voice and just would talk loud all the time. And I remember one time, 5 years old, he'd said, Dave, you have a loud voice. You're going to be a great preacher someday. So there he is. He's telling me who I am, but he's also showing me the value in it and the direction that it should go. And there are other times he'd say, Dave, you've got a very strong personality. It's going to be difficult for you to submit. So we need to talk with you about submission. So sometimes that identity was coaching me in things that needed to be improved in my identity. But he spoke lots of identity words. This is who you are. This is the value of it. This is how it fits. This is how you're going to. So I had a pretty clear sense of who I was. But it just kind of sits out there, you know, like valuable to the world. This is who you are. And I that sense of, well, what if I wasn't all those things? Will my dad still love me? That unconditional, you know, is there like an emotion coming out from him towards me? I didn't feel that emotion. Okay, keep going. Pleasure. This is real. John 5:30. He says, by myself I can do nothing. I judge only as I hear, and my judgment is just, for I seek not to please myself, but him who sent me. So you see Jesus saying, I'm seeking the pleasure of him who sent me. Are you proud of me? Do you delight in me? Are you pleased with who I am? Do you enjoy my presence? Do you like being with you? Do I bring you joy? And without pleasure from the Father, you will become addicted to pleasing people and vulnerable to hedonism. So I either will try to please you or find the pleasure. I got to get pleasure somehow. Or else you may cope by avoiding all possibility of failure or rejection. I don't need pleasure. I don't need to please anyone. There's those two responses. You could become easily addicted to almost anything. Food, alcohol, money, clothes, sex, adrenaline, unhealthy relationships. Those are often channels for pleasure seeking because we don't know the joy of God's pleasure. So when I got my dad's pleasure coming around the garage, it was actually very satisfying for me. And it was more satisfying than some of the jolts of pleasure. And I think God's pleasure should be very satisfying to our pleasure channels. And if we aren't satisfied there, then we often are trying to look for pleasure somewhere else. On the other hand, you may be passionless, without excitement, dead to joy, and unhealthy pleasure. You may exhibit a great deal of avoidance behavior, not to maximize gain, but minimize loss. And then disappointment with others could be toxic for you. How does this affect leadership? Affects it a lot, doesn't it? It can distort. If I'm not communicating pleasure in what other people are doing, then they can start to feel like I can never. This is what was happening to Tom. He never felt like he was pleasing to God, and so he never communicated pleasure on other people. So God was never satisfied with him, so why should I be satisfied with you? And so people always felt like it's never enough, it's never enough, it's never enough. So that broken pleasure channel, and you say, well, you know, I mean, what they did wasn't perfect, and I want them to keep growing. Yeah, but do they hear this? Wow, that was so cool. It's that joy that comes from, God has gifted you in such amazing, that joy that comes from a father's heart, they were not hearing that from. And the last one is place. Well, I might, a lot of people who don't get that pleasure, they go, it's impossible to please Dad. So at least I don't want to make him angry, so I'm not going to do anything. So rather than looking to please, I work to keep from angering. So my motivation is I don't want to make God angry. I don't want to make a mistake. So if I don't want to make a mistake, what's the best way not to make a mistake? Not do anything, right? And so you have avoidance behavior where my main goal is to minimize the loss, so I don't want to make you angry, rather than maximize the game. I want to hear God's well done. I want to feel his pleasure. I think of Eric Little when he said, God made me to fast, and when I run, I feel his pleasure. That's just such a great comic. So he said, I feel God's pleasure, and it fuels my soul. So do you feel God's pleasure? When you run in obedience to him, do you actually feel his pleasure? Because if you do, it will fuel you. And actually, this area of pleasure gives you motivation and energy. And if you don't have this area, one of the things where Tom was losing all his energy, burning his adrenaline, was he wasn't drawing energy from the pleasure of the Father and the cheering on of, you're my son. That's so cool. Go. I made you for this. You know, when he ran, he didn't feel the Father's pleasure. And one of the things is this can... we should be starting with an inventory of ourselves in this. So I appreciate that you're doing that because that's really where it starts. And you can say, okay, where am I seeing that? Where am I seeing this vacuum that just keeps pulling, or this deadness, or this distorted reaction? And then can I reach deeper and find out where that's coming from and actually correct those things in my heart? So here's the last one, place. John 5:21-27. There's the longest discussion of place in this passage because look at what he says. He says 21. For just as the Father raises the dead and gives them life, even so the Son gives life to whom he is pleased to give it. Moreover, the Father judges no one, but has entrusted all judgment to the Son, so that all may honor the Son just as they honor the Father. He who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father was with him. By the way, place gives honor. You see that? They honor the Son. Why? Because the Father's given him a place, which is really interesting. Pleasure gives motivation and energy. Love gives security. Identity gives value. And those are all things that we need. So he says, he doesn't honor the... And then I tell you the truth, whoever hears my words and believes will raise up to eternal life. And then look at verse 26. For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son to have life in himself. And he's given him authority to judge because he's the Son of Man. So he's saying two things. He's saying the Father has life in himself, and he's given the Son the opportunity to give life too. The Father has taken judgment, has entrusted it all to the Son. So place has two aspects. Place has the aspect of I'm going to create a place next to me so that you can do what I also do. Or I'm actually going to stop doing some things and entrust them to you with full authority and confidence in you. So it's like a dad who says, he's driving his tractor and he says, slides over, says, sit beside me, son. You got a place beside me in the tractor. And then maybe after a little while he says, you know what, the tractor, you're the tractor man. That's yours. And what fathers do good at giving, my dad did well at giving place. I remember when I was 10 years old, we had this garden and he came out and he says, Dave, this section is your section of the garden. You can raise whatever you want in it. Now it was his garden, but he entrusted a portion of it for me. So I decided to raise popcorn. I'm going to raise popcorn. You didn't know you could actually raise popcorn. You can. So he would come out and say, Dave, let me help you with your popcorn. What was his popcorn? You know, he bought the seed. It was his. but he had turned over a portion of it to me. So we worked in my popcorn, and then he was teaching me how to care for my popcorn. It was the last to be harvested. Then you have to wait for it to dry. But then around Christmas time, we started popping my popcorn. And whenever we'd have some guests, Dad would say, "Hey, let's have some of Dave's popcorn." And I'd say, "Yeah, yeah." Did you know that Dave grew this popcorn and his... And I had the sense that in my father's garden, there was a place that was had been entrusted to me. And I always felt so honored by that. My popcorn, my place in the garden. That's a, just kind of a... But I think in a bigger sense, we got to say in God's garden, in God's kingdom, he actually is scooting over and letting us sit beside him. And he's giving us portions that really belong to him. But he's entrusting them to us. And they've been given, and there's authority associated with that. We just didn't fight for it, and find it, and say, "I want a piece of it." No, the Father went and said, "Hey, come here, son, come here, daughter. This spot's yours. I entrust it to you. And if anyone wants to take it to you, take it from me, I'm going to defend it." And so when you have a sense that God has entrusted your leadership role to you, it's part of his bigger garden, that he's going to defend it, and that he's given you authority, do you know how that changes your leadership? You're going to lead with strength and vulnerability. You're not going to have to defend yourself. You're not going to sense this threat like this could get taken away, or do I really... And people who don't have a clear sense of place are always, well, some of these are down here, do I have a purpose? Do my life matter? They're always asking this question. Is there some place, do I fit? Do I belong? Am I part of something bigger than myself? Would you notice if I was gone? And that really comes from the Father. And here's some things that will happen. You'll be restless and easily distracted by greener grass. You won't be confident in your role. You may often feel threatened by others who are secure. A secure leader comes beside you, and you feel like they've just taken over your space because you don't understand that your space is yours. And so you can't work next to strong leaders because they just take over your space because you don't know your space. You will shrink back from your God-given responsibilities. You're overreact to criticism. You may use power plays to defend your space. You'll feel a constant need to prove yourself. How does that distort leadership? Major, major distortion, right? Yeah. Remember when I was a little older, my dad, we'd go on vacations, and he says, "Dave, you're in charge of packing the car." And so we bring out our luggage, and Dad would say, someone would say, "Where do I put that?" He says, "Ask Dave. He's in charge of packing." Now, it's a small thing, but I felt like, wow, I'm in charge of packing. And then when my mom would say, "Where's this bag?" Dad would say, "Ask Dave. He knows where that is." And you have this sense that in his arena of responsibility, he's entrusting a piece of that to me. Well, that just makes, and if you have that sense in ministry that what you have has been given to you, entrusted to you, that you have authority, you're going to have a totally different feel. That's the problem, is we don't get these areas stored out for ourselves, we can't pass on God's Father heart to other people. So, of these issues, God's kind of rotating it. Of these issues, this place one is the one that God's been working on my life in the last year and a half. And it was interesting because my dad did a great job of place, but I didn't get it tipped up right to the Father. And so in these last years, I've extended beyond the place that my dad gave, and I just have felt insecure in that. Like, no, wait, I'm out of my league. I have too much responsibility. I don't have authority to operate in this. And I was even sharing that with some of my coworkers, and one of them said, "Dave, you've got to get this sorted out because we're all having problems with place now. Like, you're not giving any of us clarity because you don't have clarity about your role. So the rest of us are just kind of, you're just creating fog around you." And I'm like, oh, yeah. I was seeing it as a personal issue. I'm kind of struggling. I don't know exactly. I'm over my head. Is this really, you know, all of those insecurities. But I didn't even see how it was just rippling around me. I was not giving place to anyone else because I wasn't secure in mine. Yeah. Okay, what do we do next? Yeah. Well, here's what do you do? Is there a way out? And I think there is a way out, but it's only through Jesus and the redemption that he provides. And it's interesting in John 14, it's amazing John 14, because he says, "I have this intimate relationship with the Father, and I'm going to open it up to you." And he basically invites us into the middle of his relationship with the Father. It's a fabulous, fabulous passage. Ephesians 1-3 talks a lot about that adoption that we have. And he says, "I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened so you know the riches of his inheritance, you know, and what my inheritance is, what his powers are." And there's a lot in Scripture about God actually revealing to us what's this nature of the Father relationship that I have. Through him, we have the opportunity to be refathered by God. And I think for a long time, you know, John says, Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to what? The Father but through me. Now, I memorized that verse in a salvation plan. And this is how I understood that verse. I'm the way, the truth, and life. No one gets saved but through me. Or I'm the truth and life. No one gets into Christianity but through me. No one gets their sins forgiven but through me. No one gets to heaven but through me. And all of that is true, but that's not what that verse is saying. It's saying no one comes to the Father but through me. And I get forgiven to get to the Father. I'm going to enjoy heaven because the Father's there. I get saved from my sins so I can be adopted into the Father's family. Right? You see that? And Christianity is a great place to be because it's God's family and the Father's there. Otherwise, it'd be rotten. Like it's all about it's about the Father. And so I did not understand this. Like I was stopping at salvation and wasn't getting all the way. I knew about the Holy Spirit. I knew about Jesus, but I didn't understand the Father. And so part of this is we have to realize the answer is I've got to get back. There's a Father connection I need to establish with my Heavenly Father that then will affect every area of my life. So the answer is this way. And pressing back in and saying, okay, I've got to. I remember a gal came to me and she says, God loves you so much. And I went, yeah. And she says, why does that not penetrate you? And I said, well, I know that. She said, yeah, but it doesn't mean anything to you. And I went, yeah, it doesn't. Like, why is my heart dead to the Father's love? And I had to start asking the question, what's blocking me? And how do I get that open so that I actually am experiencing the Father? I wake up this morning and I experience the Father's love. If I experience the Father's love today, you're going to experience His love through me. If I don't experience, I'm not going to have anything to pass on. And so how do we get that vertical fathering taken care of? And I think there's really three steps that are key. The first is awareness. I've got to get aware of this because a lot of times I don't even know. I didn't know that this is this truth. So part of it, actually our whole time today is really the awareness. We aren't getting much further. I hope I'm making you aware. And then the second step is a step of cleansing, because what happens is, and we don't have time to go into this more, but this vacuum fills up with debris. And so that's why when that gal came to me and said, the Father loves you, that just bounces off. Because actually, I filled this hole with a lot of other stuff. With some decisions that I can do it on my own, with some lies about who God is, with some pride and self-sufficiency. And I actually had to get in and say, how have I filled up that space? And how do I need to clean that out with repentance and faith? And there has to usually be a cleansing process that goes in there. How do I forgive my dad? How do I reject this lie? How do I move out this idolatry that I filled this with? So there's five or six key issues. You want to write them down. Lies, idolatry, wounds. You got to get that stuff cleared out. And then as soon as you do, you say, okay, I want to go to the Father for that thing. I want to go to the Father for pleasure. I want to start learning to say, God, experience God's pleasure on a daily basis. Hear Him speak words of identity to me on a daily basis. Feel His pleasure. Receive my place from Him. And then be restored to that relationship. And that makes a massive difference. Massive, massive, massive. Tom came to me for leadership coaching. We spent the next 2 days. We actually spent 12 hours in prayer and before the Lord in 2 days, 6 hours a day. And we walked back through some of his wounds. He had to forgive his dad for different things. There are some lies that he's accepted. We spent time in prayer. We spent time in scripture, cleaning that out, getting him realigned with the Father. And then for the next couple of months, actually, we're still doing this. For 12 months, we have a Skype call once a month where we just talk about father issues. And it's been amazing to see what is happening in this whole team. Last time that we talked together, I was just almost weeping because of what God's doing in his team. His team is healthy. He's starting to be a leadership magnet for people around him. He's not burned out physically. He's had some serious opposition in the last couple months that he's handled brilliantly. I mean, it's just amazing the strength he's had in the midst of it. And I just keep going, that's amazing. Where it's coming from is it's coming because he got those heart issues straightened out, and now he's a channel of that to other people around him. So I think you can't skip that step. So even as you lead other leaders, you have to at some point stop and turn up. I actually did this last night with one of our leaders. He's been bouncing around the place like crazy, and he just won't stay in position. I don't know who I am. Finally, I just said, listen, we got to go upward with this. We're just talking horizontally, and we spent 2 hours last night in prayer just asking God to show why he's not connected with the Father in that area. reveal in what the Father's perspective is on that. And it's just amazing to see in those 2 hours to see his heart just come to a place of peace. So I think as we're leading, we have to really be ready to turn people's eyes upward and consider the significance of these father issues. That was a very quick answer to complicate. This is an interesting passage, John 14:8. In that passage where he makes the shift, he says, "Show us the Father, and that will be enough for us." Isn't that interesting? What Philip says. And actually, I think that that's true. There's a satisfaction that comes from a true connection, heart connection with the Father in these areas, that actually is enough for us. So I also want to add one other thing. There's, if you're interested, we took our whole team through 4 days of Father work and just saying, let's go back and understand this a little bit more. Here's how you can do some Father mapping. Here's how you can get through these things. And so there's about 7 sessions. If you're interested, I could send you a link to it with the materials, because we're just kind of doing an intro today. And it's found by your Father. And you just need to know, if you send me an email, that it's not really, we didn't do it for public consumption. This is, you know, recordings of stuff for our team. So though it's some rough spots, but there's materials there and resources that could help you if you're interested in going deeper in some of these issues.